Welcome to Discover Library and Archives Canada, your history, your documentary heritage. I'm your host, Jessica Ouvrard. Join us as we showcase treasures from our vaults, guide you through our many services, and introduce you to the people who acquire, safeguard, and make known Canada's documentary heritage. You don't have to go far to see the influence comic books have had on contemporary culture. A quick scan of the top blockbuster movies provides a pretty good indication that the medium is here to stay. You might be surprised to learn, however, that Library and Archives Canada holds an extensive collection of comic books and related material within its vaults. In this episode, we speak with comic book historians Hope Nicholson and Rachel Ritchie about their work and LAC's role in it. Hope and Rachel were recently honored in Flair magazine's Top 30 Under 30 feature, which celebrates extraordinary Canadian women under 30 who are changing the world. They were recognized for their groundbreaking work to bring Golden Age comics back into the spotlight. Megan Scanlon, Supreme Protector of Rare Books, okay, that's not actually her title, but we like to think of her that way, Special Collections Librarian Megan Scanlon, takes us deep into the comic book collection and tells us what can be found there and online. During a recent visit to Toronto, one of our producers, Tom Thompson, took the opportunity to step in front of the microphone to interview Hope Nicholson and Rachel Ritchie.
Hi, Rachel. Thanks so much for being here today.
Hello.
I hear you have some exciting news about a feature in Flair magazine. Could you tell us a bit about that and what that means to you?
Okay. So that was kind of a surprise when I got the email about that. Flair magazine, for the first time ever, like this is their first time doing it, are doing a 30 under 30. I never, ever thought ever in my life that I would be in Flair magazine for like any reason at all. Never mind for publishing, you know, Golden Age comics. But yeah, so they're doing a 30 under 30, and Hope and I are included for publishing and reprinting Nelvana of the Northern Lights. And we also talk about our future projects like Brooke Windsor and Johnny Canuck and so on and so forth. So yeah, it's a fantastic opportunity, and I feel really, really honored by it. And on top of that, it's a great way to reach out to even, you know, a greater readership to kind of bring these comics back into pop culture. You know, I feel like it's been a journey, and like my prime directive for the last, you know, 5 or 6 years now has been to get those comics into the public eye and get, you know, get them into the mainstream, because they're great and they're totally amazing for everybody to read and to understand and to know that we have this rich comics history. So I feel like it's been a great opportunity in being able to reach even more Canadians.
I understand that you had a successful Kickstarter campaign to get the Nelvana
very
back.
Successful. Yeah.
Why did you think that was so important?
Well, Nelvana is a very important character on like a multitude of levels. She's so rich and layered in so many ways. I mean, some of the listeners might know that she is a demigoddess, but she's like half Inuit. She's the first female, like the first major female superhero in comics ever.
So which is amazing.
It's just amazing. Yeah, she predates Wonder Woman.
Exactly.
And beyond that, yeah, you know, she's Canadian produced, and she's a very strong character. She kind of overshadows a lot of female characters in comics from the time, and she. On top of that, Adrienne Dingell is a fantastic artist. Like, was working in illustration and advertising for a long time when he started doing the comics. So he really adds a lot to the art and the texture of the comics that mm-hmm. a lot of, again, this early art form, this early literary art form didn't have.
Right.
You know? So she's beautiful.
Tom had a conversation with Hope Nicholson about the origins of the Nelvana character.
Can you tell us where the inspiration for the Nelvana character came from?
Nelvana the Northern Lights was inspired by an Inuit woman named Nelvana, although I've recently learned that's not pronounced Nelvana.
Oh.
It's actually pronounced Nelvana.
Okay.
And I learned that from it could be one of two women who was living in Coppermine Northwest Territories in the 1930s.
Okay.
We're not entirely sure which, but I did meet one of their granddaughters, who's mm-hmm. also named Nelvana,
in oh, wow.
traditional Inuit naming tradition. And yeah, and she was one who told me it's pronounced Nelvana.
Right.
And one of the Nelvanas was named Connie, and she was a very kind of traditional woman. She did a lot of, artwork, sculpture, and also followed traditional ways of preparing caribou and the like. I don't know much mm-hmm. about her, but I've been chatting to her grandson a fair bit.
Great.
He's been filling me up on her. It's very likely she is the Nelvana that inspired the comic book.
Okay.
Because at the time, the artist Franz Johnston, who was a member of the Group of Seven, was traveling Northwest Territories, and he describes meeting an Arctic Madonna named Nelvana.
Wow.
And he photographed her and took paintings of her, unfortunately none of which exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I believe it's Connie and not Cecile, the other Nelvana, because Connie had a child at the time, so I feel like that fits more in with the
right.
Madonna naming by Franz Johnston. Anyways, that's another story. And yeah, Franz Johnston came back to Toronto, told his friend Adrian Dingle about this amazing woman he met, and Adrian Dingle made her into a superhero.
And in the stories, what is it about Nelvana that makes her a uniquely Canadian superhero or heroine?
Well, she's incredibly Canadian in a lot of various ways. I mean, her powers are based on the Northern Lights, and she has deep ties to the Arctic people who she protects and guides. Sometimes in later issues, this turns problematic, unfortunately. There are also things with their powers. For example, she can command polar bears upon request and ride them into battle. And her best friend is a Mountie.
Okay, oh, that's interesting.
So, yeah, so she travels kind of across Canada, really, getting into all sorts of adventures. It's quite fun.
Interesting. What is it about the medium that you think makes it survive, even in an age of digital media where it's taking over? What is it about the hard copy comic books that make it endure?
Well, I think a lot of that is the disposable nature of them. You know, they're very thin, kind of flimsy, easy to take around with you, fun to read, printed on glossy paper. It's very, makes the colors pop. And there's definitely a textural quality that I think is really hard to replicate on, well, impossible to replicate
mm-hmm.
on a digital device. That said, I can also put a lot more comics on, you know, my Kindle or
right.
what have you than that. But it's difficult. You don't want to zoom in on every panel. With a comic book in particular, your eye wants to wander around the page. Sometimes you want to look at the top of the panel. Sometimes you want to look at the bottom. And with a digital device that's, you know, fairly portable, it's not really that easy to do.
Right.
So I think definitely the medium being a lot different from books, where it's not a strict left-to-right progression.
Right.
It's all over the place.
Right.
You let your eye wander to wherever the artist guides you or to wherever you want. So.
Which is really interesting, because you could even interpret it in a different way, I suppose. You know, by letting your eye kind of, you could sort of jump ahead, and
mm-hmm.
it's not possible with a traditional book, I think. So that's an interesting distinction.
Not at all. And a lot of artists play with that too. And they know that, you know, when you turn the page, you're just as likely to accidentally see the last line of
right.
the last panel as you are to see the first line. So a lot of times that's played with, especially with, you know, repeating visuals and things like that. And so it's definitely an interesting medium that a lot of people don't realize is very nuanced and very different from any other forms of medium.
And do you think that it's a source of inspiration for people to, you know, sort of step out of their day-to-day lives and jump into a superhero's perspective for a while, or...?
I suppose so. I mean, I definitely really liked superhero comics growing up, because especially ones that blended people's personal lives. And I guess the most popular one of that would be, Peter Parker, Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was the combination of him doing his regular things, going around high school, being a nerd, getting picked on, and then going on these adventures and
mm-hmm.
that. I never personally liked Spider-Man myself, because when I was growing up at that time, he was off doing, you know, clone adventures and... stuff that was very high concept.
Right.
But I was reading a lot of Dazzler, which was about a struggling musician by day who would accidentally be drawn into all these superhero battles by night.
And oh, wow.
Make friends with the Avengers and the X-Men, but still want to just pursue her day job.
Right.
So that was really fun for me. So, yeah, there is a part of wanting to see yourself reflected, I suppose, in a more superheroic sense, but there's also a need to be grounded in some sort of reality and some sort of human connection to the character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense why that sort of, Peter Parker Spider-Man thing is so popular. It makes it easy for people to identify with, I think.
And you see that, too, with the popularity of new characters like Ms. Marvel, the Kamala Khan character, because people now, not every person is a Peter Parker. Some people are obviously women or Muslim or gay, and it's really necessary to see themselves reflected in these comic book characters as well.
Like, absolutely.
It was great when X-Men was coding it and, making mutants synonyms or metaphors for racial or sexual kind of crises. But at a certain point, you actually need to see the characters' identities reflect in the real world, too.
Here's Tom's conversation with Rachel Ritchie about the role LAC played in the republishing of Nelvana of the Northern Lights and other comics.
Did you use Library and Archives Canada's collection a lot for that project?
We used it a little bit later on Nelvana, just because at the time it was easier to kind of get it from different private collections.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because a lot of them are local. A lot of the collections, scanned it in and sent some things. We had a few scans from Library and Archives Canada, but I'd say the other later projects were heavier on those scans. I mean, as it stands right now, I have several books lined up for the future, and mm-hmm. I used it for Johnny Canuck. I will use it for Mr. Monster almost exclusively for the next book, and as well as Thunder Fist and The Brain and so many characters coming up. Polka Dot Pirate, the complete wing is coming as well. So, there's lots of it.
Okay.
Library and Archives is very present in this.
Right. And when you were going through the collection at Library and Archives, were you surprised by anything you found in there? By the size of the collection?
Oh, yeah. I mean, basically, I love school. I love learning. I love, I will never not. I just have that, that need to learn, right? So,
me too.
Yeah, right? So when I got to the Library and Archives and when I got the job working on the collection and researching it, it was basically like I was getting paid to go to school. It was like all the best parts of school.
That's like my job.
Yeah, right? You understand?
Yeah.
It was like the best parts of going to school and like none of the bad parts. Like I didn't have to write any papers. I didn't have to, get certain grades. I didn't have to, and I was getting paid to do it. It was amazing. It is the best job I will have ever had, probably. And this collection spans, that's another thing that was just really amazing for me, is that it spanned, Golden Age comics, and it went like right up to about early 2000s.
Hmm.
And it has everything in between from like every era of comics that you can imagine. There's the black and white boom in the late 80s, tons and tons of self-published indie books, like almost complete runs of the Golden Age books, sci-fi magazines from the 70s, early Captain Canuck books, just such a rich collection and mm-hmm. and like so full. Cerebus mm-hmm. is in there, like tons of Cerebus.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing collection. Really, really, truly amazing collection.
We asked Library and Archives Canada Special Collections Librarian Megan Scanlon to tell us what comic book related resources are available at LAC and online.
LAC's collection of comic books is actually quite large. It's more appropriate even to say collections because there are a few distinct ones. Two of them are special collections, that is, collections that were given to LAC as collections, and they're treated as separate collections by LAC. So the first of these special collections is the Bell Features collection, which is 382 Canadian comic books published in the 1940s by Bell Features, which was one of the major World War II era Canadian comics publishers. This collection was actually originally Bell Features' own archive of its publication, so it's quite complete. And it has been fully cataloged, so if you search for the Bell Features collection in LAC's online catalog, you will find a record that gives more details about exactly what titles that are in the collection.
Okay.
The second special comics collection at LAC is the John Bell Collection of Canadian Comic Books. This is the most significant collection we have, and as far as I know, it's the only collection of comic books in a research library that's specifically dedicated to Canadian comic books. So there are about 5,000 comics in that collection in French and English, and a couple in Inuktitut and some other languages as well. It's a wide range of material, mainly comics published by Canadian publishers, but it includes also self-published comics and zines, and also comics by Canadians published outside Canada, as well as more ephemeral things like educational comics published by the provincial and federal governments, and promotional giveaway comics from stores and restaurants. So it's really like...
That's a pretty broad range of...
Yeah. It's very interesting. That collection, unfortunately, is uncatalogued, but we do have a list of the holdings.
Okay.
So on top of these two special collections, comics published in Canada are also scattered throughout LAC's general published holdings, because these have been acquired over the years via legal deposit. So legal deposit is LAC's main collecting mechanism for published materials. Legally, every Canadian publisher is required to deposit two copies of all their publications at LAC. So obviously we get, hopefully we get comics published by Canadian publishers, and this would include graphic novels published by, mainstream publishers.
Right.
As well as comic books published by publishers dedicated to comics. So there's no guide to these holdings, but they're all cataloged and they're available for researchers. To find them, you would just search in our catalog for the title you want.
Right, so they're just interspersed throughout the regular collection.
Yeah, they're not kept together. It's not a comic book
collection. Do they
have
a subject heading that
they can be used to? I can't say for sure that all of them do.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you searched for comic strips Canadian, a lot of things would turn up, but probably not everything.
Right. On top of the vast collection of comic books, what other related resources are available at LAC?
Well, we do have a fair bit of original artwork, some related to Bell Features. The Bell Features collection that I mentioned earlier came with archival material. So there's textual records about, business records from Bell Features, as well as original art. We also have some original artwork related to Captain Canuck, the series by Richard Cumley, I think, that was first published in the 70s, I want to say. We have some original art from Mark Shanebloom and Gabriel Morissette from their series Angloman. And then John Bell, who donated his collection of comic books, also donated some original artwork and kind of ephemeral material, publicity materials related to comics that he collected over the years. And of course, LAC also, as I mentioned, through legal deposit, collects all books published in Canada. So we have books about Canadian comics in the collection. John Bell also wrote two books, one called Canuck Comics, which was published in 1986. That one is a checklist with a few essays on the history of Canadian comics, and he put together the checklist, I believe, while he was building his collection. So most of the comics on the checklist are in the John Bell collection, which of course is now at LAC. So that's a pretty good resource.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote Invaders from the North, published in 2006, which is a book-length history of Canadian comics, focusing mainly on English Canada, but that's a really good resource, too. LAC also has two websites about Canadian comic books, and there's one of them is Beyond the Funnies, the History of Comics in English Canada and Quebec, and that one does have a section dedicated to French Canadian comics, which was written by Michel Viaud, who is an expert on that. And then the other website at LAC is the Guardians of the North site. That's on the national superhero in Canadian comic art, and it was based on an exhibition put on at the Canadian Museum of Caricature in 1992 that was curated by John Bell. And there's also a physical exhibition catalog that goes with this, also called Guardians of the North, that we have in our collection in French and English.
Here's a continuation of Tom's conversation with Rachel Ritchie.
Why do you think it's important for Library and Archives Canada to maintain a comic book collection?
So I think it is important for them to maintain a comic book collection because it is a part of popular culture. And popular culture is often diminished because it's fleeting, because it has no maybe intellectual or academic, or, you know, people just kind of feel like it's superficial, so it's not worth anything. But it is basically grassroots. It is basically folk, you know, like no matter what, you've got, this is what people on their day-to-day life want to read. You know, this is why, you know, comics from the 40s are worth thousands of dollars, mm-hmm. because people in the 40s thought it was pointless and we're going to throw it away. But people, you know, like 70 years later, like, that's something that, you know, like I would want to read. I would want to access. I would want to have. So it's really important for Library and Archives to maintain this collection for people to return to. And again, like I was saying before with the zines, you've got, you know, people like that's, I say, you know, superhero stuff or anything else is grassroots or is, you know, like ground level comics. But there's even like, there's probably like over 600 or 700 small, like independent self-published zines. So you've got like individual Canadians making comics themselves because they love, you know, like their stories, what they're making, what they're thinking. And it's such a perfect examination of a certain culture of Canada that, you know, like you don't see in magazines, that you don't see, you know?
Right.
That's important.
Right.
That's really important. You know?
Well, and as a document of the times as well, to
exactly.
see what the kind of topics were, the fears were, that sort of thing.
Exactly. Like that is ground level right there. That mm-hmm. is primary documents. That is 100%. Like it's almost as good as an interview, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're getting it from, I don't know, everybody. Like, yeah, that's good stuff. That's mm-hmm. that's something that deserves and needs to be protected. And that's something that, again, popular culture in whatever country doesn't really get. So it's important to preserve that.
Here's Hope Nicholson talking about some of her upcoming projects.
And so what's your newest project? What are you working on right now?
Well, I guess that's Brock Windsor. At least he's at the printer right now. Mm-hmm. And so that was another 1940s comic book that was printed in Canada and came along a few years after Nelvana. The creator of Brock Windsor was actually a Winnipeg artist who moved to Vancouver. And he then created a character called Brock Windsor, who's this kind of medical doctor who's also an adventurer who gets lost in the land beyond the mists in the middle of Lake of the Woods. And so he goes to this magical land where everyone's a giant, there's advanced technology, everyone is also native, which you don't really see in comic books of that time period, or, mm-hmm. you know, even today, it's still a very stereotyped kind of thing, which mm-hmm. is part of the reason I'm doing another project called Moonshot, which is a collection of Indigenous comic books that focus on different identities and communities from across Canada and the States. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, kind of shows a lot of fantastical stories, but also, you know, very small traditions and things that people just really aren't aware of.
Mm-hmm. I heard some mention of a super secret project with Margaret Atwood.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to say anything about that? A little hint for us?
I'm allowed to say that I'm working on a super secret project with Margaret Atwood. And, yes, I don't know how much she wants me to say about it yet. So
all right.
I'll wait for her to take the first strides of that, but she did say that I could mention that I was working on a super secret project with her. It's coming along well, I can say that. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited, of course. It's mm-hmm. going to be something unlike that I've done to date, definitely. And yeah, when she approached me, I was just kind of floored. And I still kind of doubted myself, and so every so often I have to like double check my emails, being like, all right.
And is this really happening?
Well, for a while, I actually went to go meet her to talk about the project. And she didn't show up because, unfortunately, assistant put in the wrong day in her calendar.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm like, okay, so it's clear that someone is just fooling around with me and they just have a fake email address and whatever. But I still show up the next day because she emailed and said to meet up. And then she actually showed up and I'm like, okay, I haven't been catfished. And that's how she learned what the word catfished meant. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Tom asked Rachel Ritchie why she thought the campaign to republish Nelvana of the Northern Lights was such a success.
Nelvana, we were asking on the Kickstarter, we asked for $25,000. And, you know, I was expecting to make, I was expecting to make it. I mean, we had somebody backing us up just in case. But I was expecting to make 25,000 maybe a week before the end of the 30-day period. Mm-hmm. We made 25,000 before we had our launch party. We made 25,000 5 days into
That's
the campaign.
Incredible.
That's how badly people, like this, like Nelvana exploded. That's how badly, I mean, women are, you know, especially in comics and comics culture, are kind of desperate for like a strong, good, like group of female characters. I mean, there's some more than ever now. Mm-hmm. There's like a female Thor, there's Miss Marvel who's out right now, there's a Squirrel Girl, I could go on for ages. There's like tons, like it's a booming culture. I mean, mm-hmm. women readership is the most consistent readership.
Okay.
But within 5 days, we raised our goal, and then we doubled it. We more than doubled our goal wow. over the period of the month. So wow. it was reassuring from the Kickstarter that there was an interest here. And it's
well, that proves the importance right there, in a sense.
Exactly. Right? You know, exactly. Immediate validation. Right. I couldn't have asked for.
Must have been so exciting.
It was so exciting. I mean, we raised in the first couple of hours, I think we raised like $5,000.
Wow.
And I was like on the floor. I was like, I could not believe it. I'm like, I can't believe this is happening at this rate, you know? Yeah. Yeah. And we were going to have a launch party for the campaign to kind of draw the attention of, mm-hmm. you know, like local comic fans. And mm-hmm. we had it at the Silver Snail. And a half an hour before that party started, the campaign was funded. You know, like a half an hour. So it turned into our success party instead of right. our launch party, you know? Like, it was really surprising. Wow. But yeah, and it was the same thing with Johnny Canuck. Asked for $23,000 mm-hmm. to publish it and distribute it. And we got 31, you know, and the next book that will happen, Mr. Monster, that one is a much smaller book, so hopefully the cost will be low on that one, but I expect it to be as popular because mm-hmm. that character was readapted by an American artist in the 80s and was okay. very popular in the 80s. So I really think that one will be a big one as well. You know, people want to read these comics.
Right.
They're a treasure trove.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah.
So it sounds like you're going to be working in this field for a while.
Oh, yeah. I've committed. Like, I know that this is what I feel like I've done my civic duty as mm-hmm. well. Can, right. can I just say, like, after this, I feel like I'll retire intellectually and just read them. I'll just read them. I'll go back to doing that. I've definitely, the next 2 or 3 years of my life, I've set aside to just... at least put out the most popular ones, you know? Like, you can tell which ones were the most popular mm-hmm. when they were being put out. So put out the ones that I know will at least translate the best into modern culture and, you know, do that. I want to do Major Domo and JoJo. Polka Dot Pirate, who's another fantastic female character. She'll be another small book, but, mm-hmm. you know, Rex Baxter, who's kind of like a sci-fi hero. He's mm-hmm. fantastic. Oh, Thunder Fist, so good. There's two splash pages. One of them, he's fighting a robot, and then the other one, he's fighting dinosaurs. That's the one I'm going to do after Mr. Monster. So good. So, so good. I can't even tell you how amazing these comic books are.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's I know what I'm doing. And, you know, that's good to have direction.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
To learn more about comic books in Canada, please visit us at collectionscanada.gc.ca/comics. Also, don't forget to check our blog, thediscoverblog.com, for more content. You can find the content quickly by selecting literature from the category list on the right side of the webpage. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Jessica Ouvrard, and you've been listening to Discover Library and Archives Canada, where Canadian history, literature, and culture await you. A special thanks to our guests today, Rachel Ritchie, Hope Nicholson, and Megan Scanlon. For more information about our podcast, or if you have questions, comments, or suggestions, please visit us at bac-lac.gc.ca/podcasts.